Welcome to The Crucible, where the Southern African Institute of Mining and Metallurgy gives you a front row seat to conversations with specialists in the minerals and metals sector. SIAM has well over 100 years' experience in and commitment to protecting the professional standards of our industry. Join us now as we discuss the key issues and global initiatives to give you the relevant information needed to make informed decisions, to influence policy that directly affects our sector, and to help our industry grow in an uncertain future.
Welcome to The Crucible. Today's episode is brought to you by SIMM's Diversity and Inclusion Committee. I am Gabelo Ratube, your host for today's episode. Today's topic is tackling discrimination and unconscious bias in hiring and promotions within the Southern African mining sector. We are honored to have with us Boitumelo Dumi Nkomo. Dumi is the Woman in Mining Program Manager at Minerals Council of South Africa, with over 20 years of experience from across the financial services in the mining sector. She leads the Council's national strategies to advance gender transformation in the sector and to address the industry-wide systematic challenges that women face in mining. With a background in economics and development finance, her work focuses on creating safer, more equitable workplaces through advocacy, policy development, data-driven accountability, and cultural change. She holds a Bachelor's of Economics from Rhodes University, a postgraduate diploma and Master of Philosophy, both in development finance from Stellenbosch University Business School. Dumi, I'd like to welcome you to The Crucible.
Thank you, Gabelo, and thank you for having me today.
Thank you so much for joining us. For our listeners, could you briefly share your background and what really brought you to lead the Women in Mining program at the Minerals Council?
Thanks, Gabelo. Well, you've mentioned my academic background, and that led me into the financial services sector. And specifically, I worked in long-term insurance. However, I always wanted to have a more meaningful and direct impact on society through my day-to-day work. And this led me to, as you've said, you know, pursue the postgraduate diploma and the master's both in development finance. And when I saw an opportunity for a WIM mining project coordinator at the Minerals Council 4 years ago, I took the chance to pivot in my career and join the sector, as I found that this opportunity aligned with my personal values and my desire to contribute impactfully in the drive for societal change. And here I am 4 years later, working on the WIM program, at the Minerals Council.
So I'm quite curious. You said that it's been 4 years now. And so in the 5 years that you've been coordinating the Women in Mining program at the Minerals Council, how has the participation of women in mining evolved? And do you see any structural biases that still persist?
Absolutely. I definitely see structural biases that are still present. But can I take it a step back just to paint a picture with regards to women's participation in mining? For one, I should have also included in my background that I'm a bit of a history buff. Historical stories give me a little bit of excitement. And, you know, in doing some desktop research, I found out, interestingly enough, that women were at the forefront of mining activities globally and played a more active role in core mining about over 100 years ago, or at the genesis of mining. For example, in the 1900s, women's representation in mining in India was around 44%. And that number has significantly reduced. The recorded statistic for 2000 was sitting at 6%. And particularly interesting anecdotes for me is that in 1886, at the beginning of the Kimberley mining activity on a farm that was then called De Deutsch Bahn, A couple, Samuel Wimmer and his wife Susanna, are said to have worked side by side mining on the farm, which led to them amassing great fortune and a place in history through mining. And I can imagine there are many such stories, but women's contribution to mining was, for all intents and purposes, wiped away or relegated to administrative roles, with the subsequent enactment of laws that prohibited them from working underground throughout the 20th century. And there are a number of South African laws and international laws that prohibited women from working, especially underground, such as the ILO's 1935 Convention 45. And we saw a change in the South African context in 1996, where laws were changed, and this resulted, amongst other things, in mining opening up in all its facets to women. And the first woman to qualify for a mining engineering degree was Dale Pearson in 1994. And this was followed by Celiwe Muswane in 2005. That just gives you a picture of how long it took for transformation to really start gaining momentum. And despite the laws being in place for women to fully participate in mining, the representation of women in the sector was recorded at only 3% in 2002. And so what we also see is that the laws that were in place, though a number of them were repealed and progressive laws were eventually put in place to ensure diversity and equity, the previous laws caused unintended myths and stigmas relating to women, especially within the South African context. As you know, our society is very patriarchal, and this is also further exacerbated by traditional views on women's roles in society and the workplace. And unfortunately, some of these myths persist and continue to impact women in the mining sector. What also contributes to this is that mining was designed around the male body and physiology. And so there needs to be a continued drive to address this, looking at physical amenities on mines, whether above ground or underground, amenities such as ablution facilities, hygiene facilities, even the machinery that is used can create a barrier. And then there's also the persistent gender stereotypes and services such as health services and health screening, because mining impacts women physically in a different manner to how it impacts men physiologically. So it's important that we ensure gender mainstreaming continues to play a role in ensuring that the mining workplace is inclusive and caters for all regardless of gender. We have come a long way. At the beginning of the Women in Mining program, we were sitting at a representation of 12% across the industry in 2020. And as of 2024, statistics were sitting in the region of 19. So in a roundabout way, that just gives a picture of how we are progressing as women within the mining sector.
I think you bring across a lot of really interesting points that I hope that we can touch on in the limited time that we have. You talk about just the cultural stereotypes that are attached to women in this mining in the industry, but also you bring forth a very interesting perspective that women were previously quite an integral part of the mining industry. You point out to the Webbers, for example. But I think what's quite interesting is when you point out that once all the progressive laws have been put forward and there's a little bit more women that are being encouraged to rejoin the mining industry, we have the first mining engineer, you said, was it, or that was given a role in 1994. That's not so long ago. And I imagine that there's still some kind of perhaps promotional biases that still exist, especially when it comes to hiring women. So I want you to touch a little bit on what kinds of discrimination or any kind of unconscious bias that really affect the hiring and promotional decisions of women in the mining industry. Could you share some examples that you might have come across with your work in the women in mining industry?
There are biases definitely do negatively impact marginalized groups. They impact women, and these do have an effect on the hiring and also promotional decisions. And I also just want to point out that this is not specific to mining only, but this does appear, or it does occur, in other industries as well, especially in male-dominated industries where people may hold unintentional attitudes towards certain groups that can shape decisions without them being consciously aware. That is the nature of biases. And, you know, we all hold biases, and it is a lot of work to, first of all, accept that we have biases, to unearth them and to effectively deal with them so that they do not negatively impact the next person. So in terms of, hiring and promotional activities, I would say we need to be conscious of the language used when advertising for roles. But I think what is critical, even before we get to hiring stage, is for organizations to also consider workplace demographics and have intentional plans in place to facilitate the recruitment of diverse talents. Because if you are not aware, even when looking at what the demographic of your workforce looks like, you won't know that there is an issue that needs to be dealt with. And this is as it relates to having diverse workforces that are representative of the working demographic of, for example, South Africa. Then back to hiring processes, what you also find is that where you have male-only interview panels, this is also a challenge, as it's an avenue in which biases may impact the kind of questions that potential hirees are asked, or you have instances where women are viewed as only being suited to administrative roles rather than engineering operations. And you can imagine, in an industry where legally women were only allowed to work in administrative roles, your office jobs, your HR jobs, it takes time for a male who started in their career in mining, where this was the case, to now have a mindset shift and see a woman being capable to go underground, work as a geologist, work as a mining engineer. So we need to be intentional about tackling these biases that may exist. When you then look at opportunities for promotions, what may happen is, in male-dominated teams, male candidates may be preferred simply because they are perceived to fit in more easily, and this may result in the unintended consequence of women being overlooked for promotions or consideration for inclusion in development pathways or mentorship and sponsorship. And that is, you know, what is usually called affinity bias, which is an issue across the board, not just in promotional settings, but also we have that show up even in, you know, our private relationships. These are things that, you know, we really need to be aware of. And it also does take training and consistent communication and engagement around and ensuring that our systems, as far as possible, mitigate against these biases showing up.
That's quite interesting what you say there. And you bring in a lot of persistent challenges, not only when it comes to discriminatory hiring and promotional practices, but earlier you also talked about just the lack of gendered PPE, for example, or just the facilities that women might need working in the industry. There's also other issues that haven't really come up, but such as pay disparities, or there's also issues of harassment in an environment where obviously there's just a lot more male than female. Then we see a lot of issues of harassment, for example, popping up in the industry. And so I'm aware that there's conversation in the industry about, for instance, machinery being also one issue that might disadvantage women from being given roles such as engineering or, for instance, geologists in the industry. But there's a lot of innovation that's happening in terms of machinery and just the different technologies that are coming across that aid in the different mining processes. So from exploration and all of that. And it also then brings a level of safety, because perhaps safety was also another reason that perhaps women won't be safe in this environment. But safety is not so much an issue anymore with all these new technologies that are coming in. So I'm curious to know, from your perspective in the work that you've been doing, what are some of the initiatives that you can point to that are underway to sort of combat these biases that you brought up and kind of level this playing field?
I will speak specifically to initiatives that I am directly involved in at Minerals Council level, where we work collaboratively with our member organizations. So we've got the Women in Mining strategy that's in place to address these challenges. And we work, as I said, collaboratively with our member organizations and their representatives to come up with initiatives and campaigns that will address the challenges directly. And we have a newly defined strategy that is intended to be driven operationally across our membership. And it is underpinned by leadership accountability to drive our WIM objectives. And also it's informed by data insights to ensure that we really tackle those challenges that women face. Our strategy, and I'll speak about it at a really high level, is driven through a pillar framework which has been crafted. And the pillars that we are working through, I'll just list them. The first one is working to ensure a safe and equitable and dignified working environment so that we create physical and psychological safety. So that touches on the issue of having appropriate PPE in place for women. It touches on ensuring that we address gender-based violence, that we address sexual harassment that may be in place, as well as psychological safety. Because, you know, if you're, especially in the mining sector, if you are not psychologically present, it doesn't just have an impact on the women. It has an impact on the entire workforce. So that is a critical issue for us. And then we've got a pillar that looks at inclusive leadership. And again, creating respectful workplaces where a comprehensive culture change is driven by the most senior members in an organization. And then what is also important for us is to ensure that we have a robust pipeline, right? So this pillar is looking at diverse talent development and career advancement. So we are very intentional about not only attracting women into the mining sector, but also ensuring that women thrive and progress within their mining careers. And this is done through skills enhancement, looking at mentorship opportunities to drive career growth pathways. And all of this, as I said earlier on, is also underpinned by data accountability. So we developed a Women in Mining gender portal, which tracks the industry's performance against WIM imperatives, such as you mentioned, the gender pay gap, provision of PPE again for women, ensuring that we've got the correct physical amenities that also contribute to dignity of women coming to work in the mining industry. And we initiate periodically a pulse survey that gives us data on the ground to see how women are experiencing the workplace, and also help us to gain insights on areas that need specific attention and that we can drive at an industry level to fast track our transformation agenda. And then we've also included an aspect that extends beyond the mind gates, where we look at economic transformation to ensure that in the communities in which we operate, we do have a positive impact, especially looking at incidences of GBV as well, and opportunities that women entrepreneurs can also get access to and take advantage of outside of the mind gates.
That's absolutely incredible. But I wanted to touch a little bit more on leadership and culture. You brought it up in one of your pillars. And I really do believe that leadership has a really important role in promoting a culture of inclusiveness. And so I want you to perhaps, I guess, give advice or maybe let us in on what leadership or managers or people in roles such as these, what they can do in order to promote a work culture that is centered around dismantling these unconscious biases that we are faced with, especially when it comes to hiring and promotion of women in the industry. Would you share a little bit on that?
Yes, I absolutely can. And as you said, leadership really does play a key role in advocating for dismantling of biases. And we all know, as the saying goes, the fish rots from the head. I don't know what the positive is for that, but I can say that change definitely is driven from the top and cascades through all operational levels. You know, at Minerals Council, we've got the CEO Zero Harm Forum, for example, which is a sitting of mine CEOs to ensure the principle of safety first is embedded in all mine activities across the industry. And recently, the WIM objectives have been elevated to this forum to ensure the visibility of the change that we are driving is at the highest level. And what we've also seen is the leaders of our member organizations are also now including WIM objectives as a KPI in their performance agreements. And this is a further testament to the commitment to drive change in mining by the leaders. So leadership really, really does play an important role in the transformation drive that we are advocating for. And we are seeing really great examples of that.
Okay. So what would Dumi say as parting words to a woman that is either trying to penetrate the mining industry or is in the mining industry and really is trying to, I guess, smash the glass ceiling, and they are faced with a lot of these hiring and promotion obstacles in order to further their careers in the industry? What kind of advice would you give to such a woman?
I would say speak up. I would say where you experience challenges, there are avenues to speak up on these challenges that you experience. Use the systems that are in place in the organization and advocate for yourself. I would say put your hand up. There are opportunities that are in place to, you know, elevate opportunities for career growth. The time now is prime for women to really take their stand and take their seat at the table. So put your hand up where you see opportunities in place. I would also say identify a mentor, identify somebody that you can approach to be a sponsor, and really make those connections that will be useful to you. I would also say don't just look within your organization. There are great organizations externally, such as WIMSA, for example, which is a volunteer member organization that provides a platform for women within the industry to connect, debrief on the challenges that they experience, and also, you know, share insights on strategies to navigate this industry. Mining is not what it was 20 years ago for women. It's not yet where it ought to be or what we wish to see, but we've definitely come a long way. And so speak up, put your hand up, make those useful connections, dig deep into the toolbox of strategies and find your resilience, because mining is also a great industry to be a part of. It's at the cutting edge of technology. It's one of the bigger contributors as a sector to the GDP. So there's lots of opportunities to grow yourself and also to grow the sector. Don't give up and just know that you've got a lot of sisters and you also have a lot of brothers as well, because we've got incredible male allies that are there to support and also champion the cause for women. So do not suffer in silence, I would say.
Thank you very much, Dumi, for an insightful conversation and making the time to come and share your insights with us.
Thank you for having me, Kabelo. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Great. Transforming mining culture takes more than just strategy. It requires courageous leadership, inclusive practices, and a sustained commitment to inclusivity. Keep mining for fairness. This episode of The Crucible was brought to you by SIMM's Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Stay tuned for future episodes where we dig even deeper. This was it for The Crucible. Goodbye. Thank you for listening. Please note that the facts and opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not reflect the position of SIMM or the corporate institution.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.